and to your chairman. So what I would suggest on this particular stretch, Mr. Chairman, is that, and if a motion is in order, I would move that we table this stretch until Mr. Tuthill is able to obtain the information that we need to continue discussion with it, because I thought the Malad River was a complex water system. But it's kind of on a parallel with the Teton River, because those folks have some very complicated exchanges over there. They have some concerns, and so I would move that we table this particular in-stream flow request until Mr. Tuthill can get the information and make sure that all players are understanding what they are talking about.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carried. Okay, Mr.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Mr. Hammonds.
Point of information. Under our rules, what does it require to lift from the table?
I think only a motion brings it back on the table. A motion.
Robert's rules of order, governments.
Thank you.
No discussion on the table.
Final minimum flow that we looked at in the public meetings was on Bitch Creek. Bitch Creek is again in eastern Idaho. Here's the Teton River again, and it is a tributary to the Teton River. The reach that we're looking at extends from the highway about 8 miles up from the confluence downstream to the confluence with the Teton. In this reach, there is one recorded water right in addition to the board filing. The board filing is for 28 cubic feet per second, number 227370. Again, June 19th, 1981 was the application date. The one additional application is number 22-7425. It's an application for permit for a power generation site. The power proposed would have a point of diversion upstream near the start of the reach of the board application and would pipe the water down to a turbine located at a location near the end of the reach. So the location of the competing application later in time, or junior application, is approximately the same as the board filing. We don't have a lot of gauging data on the creek. There was a gauging station located at the upper end by Highway 92 for 3 years, 1975 through 77. And those years happened to include a couple of above average water years and one extremely low water year, 1977. The measurements taken aren't enough to really develop a flow duration curve, but this gives an idea of the measurements made in those 3 years. We can see that it's a fairly constant stream, even in spite of the three widely different water years on the Snake River. The flows on Bitch Creek were much the same, which indicates this also is a groundwater fed or recharged stream. In the winter time, the flows are lowest. In the spring and summer, the flows are higher. This compares with the 28 cubic feet per second application by the board. This concludes the information that we have on this file, the department records.
Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chairman, fellow board members. If we take into consideration what our creator did when he made streams and he made beauty, Bitch Creek certainly has to fall into it, because it is absolutely one of the most beautiful streams that you're ever going to see. To put a hydropower or anything else on this stream would just absolutely be a travesty. The folks in the local area are supportive of a minimum stream flow on this particular reach. And Mr. Chairman, if motion is in order.
Motion is in order.
I would move that we request the Director of the Department of Water Resources to proceed with minimum stream flow hearings on Bitch Creek.
Is there a second to the motion?
Yes.
Any discussion? Anything about Mr. Gray? Kind of reminds me of the Blue Ribbon Streams. Every stream in Idaho is a Blue Ribbon Stream, and what you're saying is every stream in Idaho that you saw is gorgeous.
Mr. Chairman, this is above and beyond Blue Ribbon Stream.
This is over in eastern Idaho, and it actually is an interesting place. If I might make a comment, as we were approaching the city of Driggs to hold the meeting, we stopped at the where the highway crossed the stream. And here's a young lady taking pictures of it. And later that evening, when we had the meeting, there she was, and it turns out that she was a reporter from a paper, I think it's Rexburg. And she said this was, to her, the one of the best photogenic pieces of water they had over there. It turned out very little of it. I don't remember any objection to the approval of this for minimum street flow. And I heard some people say they sure didn't want that hydro thing to go in.
Mr. Director.
Mr. Chairman, after hearing the glowing terms of Bitch Creek, I wonder if we shouldn't change it to Lady or Maiden Creek.
I often wonder why the name. Let's see, no more discussion. We have a motion before us. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, motion carried.
I found in January. He says, oh, that's a close.
Mr. Chairman, that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Ms. W.
Good story, dude.
Okay, we're going to skip agenda item number 6 and go to agenda item number 7. Mr. Hawes. What happened, Mr. Hawes? We're on agenda item number 7, Mr. Hawes. Staff presentation on remote sensing.
Mr. Chairman, board members, had a request from a couple of the board members that we have staff review with you or present to you some of the work that we're doing here on staff on remote sensing techniques. I think it'd be very informative to you. It's a very interesting technique. It's something that I think that we'll be able to use in studies such as the general adjudication study that is being proposed under the Snake River Agreement. And I'd like to have Mr. Hal Anderson make the presentation to you.
Mr. Anderson, all yours.
Mr. Chairman, board members. My attempt to be brief, which I understand is a must for this particular situation, I'm going to try real hard to get quite a bit of information done or presented within a half an hour. So sometimes I get a little overzealous in the use of my jargon and technical terms. So if you have any particular questions at any time, if I have gone over, glossed over something you don't understand, feel free to stop me. I can probably give you some good definition of some of the terms I'm talking about and possibly some of the approaches. Beginning in about 1975, the Department of Water Resources became involved in the applications of utility of remote sensing data for the inventory and monitoring of irrigated croplands in Idaho. Because of that work, the governor established within the department the Idaho Image Analysis Facility and essentially gave the Department of Water Resources lead agency responsibility for the promotion and applications of digital image processing. Ah, you might ask, what in the world is all this stuff? Well, I just happen to have some definitions for you here. I'll start with digital image processing, since that's primarily what our lead agency status is about. Digital image is nothing more, digital is number. Image is some sort of photographic representation or picture, if you will. So what you're talking about is numerical pictures. Okay, let's try to think about that for a minute. Processing is the ability to be able to analyze digital pictures, okay, to come up with some sort of representation of whatever it is you're looking at, whether it be an object, whether it be the earth, whether it be a person. Okay, so I'll leave that there. I spent a lot of time on that. So it's numerical pictures, okay? Remote sensing is the ability to be able to collect information about something, some object or phenomena, without being in contact with that object. You don't have your grubby little hands on it. Looking across a room, seeing a pretty stream, you're analyzing, looking at something and analyzing in your mind, that's a pretty stream. Okay, that's remote sensing. Cameras take pictures, you look at the pictures. Looking at those pictures and interpreting what that picture says is remote sensing. We'll take that one step further, and I'll be talking quite a bit about the Landsat satellite portion of remote sensing. There's all kinds of different sensors used in remote sensing. But I want to go one step further and talk a little bit today about another buzzword that you're probably going to be hearing a lot about in the future. It's called geographic information systems, and what they are is an organized approach to the storing and retrieving and manipulation of spatially referenced data. Ah, another buzzword, spatially referenced. All that means is we know where it is on the Earth, okay? It has something about it that we know where it is, whether it be a point on the ground, whether it be an area on the ground, and it is referenced to the Earth coordinate systems. Okay. Could I have the lights, please?
Mr. Hammes would like to ask a couple of questions.
Certainly.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hammes.
On this digital picturing, are you saying you're referring to assigning a number to a density value? Is that what you're saying?
We get a numerical representation of the Earth's surface, whether it be primarily what I'm going to be talking about is spectral reflectance. Okay. That is light bouncing off
value.
The Earth. A density value.
Thank you.
That is correct. Any other questions? Okay. I'm going to talk now. Could I have a slide projector on, please? About the Landsat satellite system. We spent quite a bit of our time in the last 5-6 years looking into the utility of satellite sensor data for monitoring and inventorying irrigated croplands. This is a schematic, if you will, or pictorial representation of the Landsat satellite. Happens to be at about 500 miles in space. This is an older satellite system, but the primary system that we're utilizing on this satellite is called the multispectral scanner.
See that there on the slide? There.
And it collects information on about 100-square-mile frame, if you will. There is a representation of that frame right on that wall over there, if anybody has ever spent the time to read that. That is a pictorial representation of these digital values that is coming from that satellite. It's beamed to Earth, put on a tape, run through a special machine that then develops those light values into an actual photograph. We're not working with photographic data, we make photographic data out of numbers. Okay, the first satellite was launched in 1972, so we have information covering all of Idaho all the way back to 72. This does cover Idaho quite a bit. The satellite is capable of obtaining what's called multispectral, hence the multispectral scanner data. And what that means is that the satellite does not see the Earth as we do. We see a conglomeration of all kinds of colors. We can see blues and reds and greens. The satellite is set up so it only sees one particular color. It sees green and it sees red. And it sees two infrared bands. Okay, these are called bands, these things it sees. And each of the infrared bands now are not heat. These are not heat infrared, what they're called photographic infrared. And it's basically just past the color red in the energy spectrum, and it reflects quite highly actively growing photosynthetic vegetation. Okay? So it's the infrared bands are used extensively for irrigated agriculture applications. Okay, the next generation of these, which is already up in space now, includes another sensor system called a thematic mapper. This particular multispectral scanner senses the Earth in four bands, and each little picture element, the best it can resolve is 1 acre. The new sensors up called the thematic mapper has 7 channels of information on it and can resolve to 1/4 acre. Okay. One nice thing about this satellite data is that we have at least, as a minimum, 18-day repeat cycle. So every 18 days, this is flying over the same spot in Idaho and acquiring imagery. It's very important for any sort of time analysis, how growing crops are growing over a growing season. Okay. What you get from that Landsat satellite is a computer tape of a bunch of numbers. Over the years, we have developed the capability here to take that computer tape of numbers and generate either photographic products or any myriad of different things our hotsy-totsy little computer can give us out of the other end. But it's what I can say is a relatively complex analysis of these numbers, but After a little bit of experience, I can say we have a pretty good handle on all the intricacies involved in the processing of this information. Okay, that's great. It's neat stuff. What can you do with it? This happens to be a photographic representation of this Landsat data. It's called the MSS response. Everything you see here, this bright red, is actively growing vegetation, alfalfa, corn, sugar beets, everything that's green, since this is light tan, white, is probably harvested grain. Fallow fields you see it's pointing here to are these blue areas, so anytime you see the blue, you're talking about bare soil. Small grains pointing to the white here. It's kind of difficult to see on this slide, but there's a lot of information on one of these frames covering 100 square miles at a side. Okay, what are you going to do with it? The two major areas of emphasis here have been land cover classification, that is trying to determine where the irrigated lands are in Idaho, and actually counting the acres of them, telling whether the land is basically irrigated or non-irrigated. The other thing of major emphasis for us has been trying to determine what kind of crops are growing on those irrigated lands. We all know that different crops consume water at different rates. We have some very good data in Idaho that says for a given area in Idaho, crop A consumptively uses X amount of water. So we furnish crop type information and acreages to our hydrology section here, and they use those information in our ground and surface water modeling programs. The other thing that's really nice about this data is that it's really handy for monitoring change. With that 18-day repeat cycle, we're able to look at the same surface, same area on the ground every 18 days, and even in between years. Same, we'll be taking the same picture this year as next year. So we do a lot of change monitoring types of activities with this. Where's lands going into and out of production? Okay. Any particular questions on the satellite information before I move on into something totally different? Yes, Mr. Franklin.
Does the multispectral take a series of pictures with different type of filters so that you get an overlay?
Basically what it does is it's a scan type of an arrangement, and it's a series of sensors all lined up in a row. Okay, So it sweeps across like this with all four bands at once.
Oh.
Okay. And it's as it's going forward, the satellite scanning rate is timed on its forward movement. So it essentially just sweeps the Earth like this, okay, with what's called a push broom type technology. And that's timed on its orbiting speed. It's actually pretty simplistic in design, but relatively complicated.
Mr. Emerson?
Yes, sir.
Did you say 100 square miles or 100 miles square?
100 miles on a side.
Thank you.
Can it see through clouds?
No, cannot. This is, this information, radar and microwave can. These particular wavelengths cannot penetrate clouds. Clouds can be a significant problem, especially the last few years they have been. Okay, I'm going to move into something a little bit different. Okay, new satellite data to generate land cover maps, where irrigated lands are, what kind of crops are growing in them. I'm not going to get into the details of all that. It's relatively complex, but I would be glad to sit down at any point in time and discuss those with you.
Excuse me. Yes, sir. Hal, you might also mention, or maybe you are, that some of the other uses, like your fish and game, forest service and stuff.
That's right. Thank you. There are other people in the state of Idaho that use the facility here that we've developed over the years for the classification of this type of data. This particular project that I'm going to show you here is one that we did in 1980, and we did it cooperatively with the U.S. Geological Survey and the Bureau of Reclamation. And this was to classify all the irrigated croplands on the Snake River Plain. The Bureau of Land Management, the Soil Conservation Service, are just a few of the agencies that have used the capabilities that we have here to generate land use and cover information over the years. We are currently involved in probably four or five different projects to expand our capabilities in the utility of all these technologies. This is an application that we use the satellite data for. It's very well suited for large area inventory and monitoring. Okay. This is just a photographic representation of irrigated lands. The light green here is surface water irrigated. Dark green is groundwater. If I'm getting it correct. Dark green is groundwater irrigated. The orange areas here are dry land. Purple is urban areas. Here's Boise here. Quinn, Lake Walcott. And all the brownish, light brown areas are rangeland. The lava flows here. Snake River.
Now, all the white area is rangeland?
All the tan area is rangeland. Okay.
Mr. Ray, point out, I think, is you say the light green is surface irrigated?
That is correct.
And the dark green is what?
Groundwater irrigated.
It's just amazing that it's that specific.
Well, I'll talk about that a little bit, if you'd like. The satellite does not know groundwater from surface water irrigated, okay? We cheated on this a little bit. But that's my next topic, okay? How to cheat and get away with it? No. We overlaid other information onto our satellite data. Okay, that other information was ground and surface water maps that were produced by the department between 1975 and 1978, which included on them irrigation district boundaries, and within that irrigation district, whether it was a surface water, groundwater, or irrigation district. This Landsat satellite data, we register to maps. So all this information you see is essentially a map. All the data is rectified to the ground. And then we were able to overlay these service source area maps, irrigation district maps, and say, okay, the satellite says it's irrigated. If it's irrigated and it falls within district thus and such, if that is a groundwater irrigation district, it must be groundwater irrigated. Okay? That's how this particular product was developed.
Each square is a township?
That is, yes, that's correct.
So 6 miles?
6 miles on the side. 36 miles.
Yeah.
36 miles.
36 miles square is 6 miles.
Right. Right.
Long. Or wide.
Wide. Correct. Okay. That is a change detection, little change detection work. Is this thing in focus? Can everybody see that? I can't tell.
So. Understand it. It's upside down.
Not quite. Is that better? Okay. What we've done here is overlaid two dates of information on this particular photographic rendition here. And everything that you see there that is red,
these areas here, this is happens to be the King Hill area, right here on the river. This is Sabre Creek track, I believe that's called. This is Black Mesa, which is no longer irrigated.
Sure enough is.
Okay. Yeah, it's all appropriate.
And yes, it's colored. The black means it's out of production. The red means it's new between 1980 and 1983. Probably new. Okay? Mm. The light green is areas that were irrigated both years.
Once again, this is map registered information. All we have to do now is transfer this information into a map, onto a map base, or we can tell the computer to give us a readout, actually count the number of acres involved in each of those different categories. Yes, sir.
Did you say that all the black areas are not irrigated?
Probably out of production areas.
This is, that's out of production.
Possibly. There's a high probability, we have not verified any of these. What this is what we call a screening.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Okay. What this particular rendition says is there was something significantly different between the 1980 reflectance and the 1983. In other words, that was showing as an irrigated category in 1980, but as a non-irrigated category in 1983. There could be other phenomena associated with that. Crop typing patterns could account for some of it. But
we know here for sure we're correct. Okay. Is the Indian Hills project on that map? Is that this?
No.
If,
I don't know where we are.
Yeah. If it,
excuse me, this is King Hill right here. Okay. And you're seeing the snake comes right down through here.
I think Indian Hills is, it would be the next one,
yeah,
over.
This one or this one?
No,
okay. No, off screen to your left. Left.
Off screen to your left.
Off screen to the left.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, the Bell Rapids area then is the area that we see right in the middle with the most irrigated land, I imagine.
Up in here?
Yeah, that
would, yeah, I think the Bell Rapids area is right in this particular area. I think you're correct.
But all the comparisons showed you there was substantial difference in reflectance.
That is correct. This is not. What this was, what the way this particular technique was developed is to show us areas that have a very high probability of some change event occurring. Okay.
We have checked a number of these areas and found that we have relatively, greater than 70% or so agreement The areas going out of production are much more difficult to quantify than the areas coming into production, okay? Simply because of what the differences within a crop typing change may cause, say possibly grain, harvested grain one year and a row crop the other year may contribute to that. Not necessarily so, but it may. Okay. We have tried to take care of most of that confusion in this particular product. Yes.
Does this delineate the pick removals?
It could be. That could be
what a number of these are. In fact, that's what I would imagine a lot of these are pick acres that are in weeds at the time that this particular image was acquired, the 1983 image was acquired. Could very easily have been pick acres. Okay.
Okay, we've generated some land cover information, okay? What are you going to do with this stuff now as far as being able to generate numbers for it, use it for plan resource planning? Try to, you can see the utility of this possibly for coming up with numbers of irrigated acres that have come into production. Also look at it, the potential of looking at areas that possibly went out of production. Okay. What that says is, if you're looking for an area that went out of production,
you're going to want to look at these areas and not worry about anything that's in the bright green.
Okay. And you can do that a number of ways. You can get in a pickup and drive out there. You can fly aerial photography of it, whatever best suits your needs.
If you have, say we had a big field of alfalfa,
mm-hmm.
and it came time to cut a crop, would the color change on the, after the cut?
That is correct, it would.
And can you detect a difference between, say, an alfalfa field and a wheat field?
Mm-hmm.
Can you pick out marijuana farm?
Uh-huh. He's not telling.
Not if I get there first. No. The University of Idaho has done some research on that particular subject. But found that in North Idaho anyways, where they were growing the marijuana was such that it was underneath either a tree canopy of 30% or greater, or within corn rows, that sort of thing, where the spectral reflectance would be completely dominated by the cover crop. Okay.
Mr. Anderson?
Yes.
So that everybody knows where Castle Ford is, would you pointed out right down there, I see it right there on that right hand corner, lower corner, probably down even a little further there, right there should be, so I want everybody to know where it is.
There's a piece of rangeland down there.
That's Castle Ford.
That's that Wells in Ute. The balanced rock, that's that funny look shaped thing you see right on the side there.
Right.
Well, back towards the west. Yeah, right in there.
Right in there.
I'll take your word for that, Mr.
Chairman. Salmon Falls Creek goes down through there.
Okay. We've got some land cover information here, okay? There's a lot of different things we can do with it. There's a lot of permutations of the data that we can... There's a lot of massaging that we can do to look for specific things, okay? What are we going to do with it? Here's an octopus for you. I think you've got a little paper that I presented at a recent conference explaining this, and Wayne Hawes has personally said that if anybody's able to read my paper and understand what in the world I'm talking about, he will personally buy you lunch. Isn't that what you said?
We'll talk about that.
Oh.
Where's the paper in?
He's safe.
Maybe he decided not to include it. Okay.
Isn't this max a hydraulic?
What this is an octopus, a wiring diagram, some people affectionately call it, explaining how we use the digital information that we process from the satellite data. How do we use it, how do we improve it, and how it fits into the Idaho Department of Water Resources information analysis and distribution system.
What I've been talking about primarily involves And all those pictures you saw were this particular section of the Idaho Water Resource Information System. Where we did the actual image processing associated with the Landsat satellite data. Okay, this segment of the system over here is what I'm calling the digital cartographic section, or digital cartography. And that allows us then to enter information from aerial photographs and maps into a digital form also, a numerical form, so both the satellite information and our map information are compatible. Okay, so they're both numbers now. There's not just a picture and there's not just a map. Why do we do that? So we can put it into the computer. Basically is what it boils down to. This computer right here. The other thing that we're working on is the inclusion of the computerized tabular water rights file with this current and historic land use information and computer-generated cartographic information. Okay? What's that going to give us? It's going to give us the ability to be able to get, in real time, hopefully, current and historic land use associated with a water right, point of diversion, whatever. Okay? It looks good on paper. We're working to that right now. It is a very involved process. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what we've done with it and just exactly where we sit with it. Okay? This happens to be a coordinate digitizer. You see a map on the table there. The operator is digitizing section corners, actually, on this particular map. All of that satellite information we get has to be registered to the ground before it's usable to us. Okay? To do that, we have to take coordinate points from the map and find those same areas on the satellite data. The same, he pushes a button on this little cursor here and sends a coordinate to the computer. That coordinate happens to be in latitude and longitude. That's a whole nother bucket of worms, but the Landsat satellite data also understands coordinates in latitude and longitude. Okay, so we find that point on the map, we find a similar point on the satellite data, then we run a series of programs that allow us to actually stretch that Landsat data just as if it was on a rubber sheet to fit a map. So all that data is then in what's called true plan position, or all that data represents what is actually on the ground. Okay. This digital map information is processed on the department's new VACS. Okay, this is a segment of some...
Ooh, that's good.
Close your eyes. Okay, there's King Hill.
No, there's not anymore.
What are you doing, bud?
You're going to get air sick here if you keep watching it.
Yeah. I'll hold it. No, I can't hold it.
No.
It's having a hard time with this one, isn't it? Well, okay, this is a psychedelic rendition of King Hill. This is the freeway here, by the way. Here is Black Mesa again. Here. This is Paradise Valley, I believe. Okay, this is Snake River.
How do you do that?
I would if I could.
I don't know if there is an autofocus off on it. Okay. I want you to keep this area in mind because I'm going to show you a little application.
Makes you dizzy.
It sure does, doesn't it?
Quickly.
Boy, you ought to be up here. Okay. Look at this area. Yeah, let's go to the next slide. Please. Ah. Oh, it's doing it again, isn't it?
It breathes.
It's a living slide projector. Okay, this is something we might find interesting here. Based on that satellite data, this is a rendition that we put together. Yeah. Okay, what this shows you is everything that is in
The light green color here is irrigated farmland. Everything that's in brown is rangeland, non-irrigated lands. Blue is, of course, water. Okay? What I'm going to show you is information that we've input into the Idaho Water Resource Information System that I talked to you about, and how we plan on using this information, or how we could potentially use this information to aid the department in an adjudication effort. See if we can get something else. Does everybody know what that is? Besides out of focus? Okay. This happens to be... Should we stop here? This happens to be a digitized township. Okay? The township was digitized on the map by the operator you saw earlier pushing the little buttons on the map. We have written software within the department to take the section corners from a township and automatically, via recreation of how the public land survey was done, produce a quarter-quarter grid of rendition of that public land survey description of that township. So what you're seeing there is, after we have put that into the computer system and then made what's called a raster image, and I don't want to define that. I will be glad to do it at a later time. In other words, what we do is we make picture elements, or we make little squares out of the lines, okay? See how it's kind of, how the lines come along and they jump up and around? Can anybody see that?
They're jumping.
Yeah. Okay. What that says is there's a straight line going through there, but remember I said the satellite could only see down to 1 acre? Well, each of these little tiny squares that make up this line is a series of 1 acre cells. Okay. So the satellite information and the public land survey information are compatible. Okay? Remember I said the satellite information was registered to a map? Okay. The public land survey information is also registered to a map. What we have to do is calculate what is the real coordinate of the public land survey in latitude and longitude, like the satellite information sees it. Okay? This is a township overlay placed on that irrigated, non-irrigated rendition of the Landsat satellite data, and we now have the ability then to extract information from each one of these grid cells individually, which happens to be a quarter-quarter section or a 40-acre chunk of ground, okay? And since within each of these little cells we have an X number of 1 acre cells, we can count up the number of cells that are green and the number of cells that are black and give you an acreage figure of lands that were irrigated in that particular quarter-quarter for that date and time. Okay? Now, let's talk a little bit about accuracy on these things. Maybe I better get through these. Another thing we can do, see, is overlay it onto before you had a simplified rendition, this is the information as it comes off the multispectral scanner.
And we can also then count up these white areas, which are grain within a 40-acre cell, and these red areas, which we can actually come up with crop types, give or take a few, and calculate the amount of alfalfa, corn, sugar beets, etc., by quarter acre cell.
Okay. Hurry.
Okay, can I have the lights, please? Okay, in summary, I just want to say that these technologies, we've come a long ways with them since 1975.
A little bit about accuracy. We're able to, some of our tests have shown that, a number of our tests have shown that we can get, for irrigated, non-irrigated, with technology that we've already improved on since this last test was done, greater than 90% accuracy for each of those little individual 1 acre cells of whether it's irrigated or not. Greater than 90% accuracy. And we've improved on that, I would say, probably talking about greater than 95% as of today. We haven't quantified that yet. That's just my personal feeling. Okay, but I can say quantifiably, we have got greater than 90%. As far as the ability to be able to count those little 1 acre cells that fall within the little grid I was showing you, our latest tests have shown that we can calculate the number of acres within one of those within plus or minus 3 acres greater than 90% of the time. Okay, as a bottom line figure, I think 91% was actually the figure that we calculated in our test. So the technologies are constantly improving. Our abilities to be able to use them are operational, and the results are quantifiable, easily updated because the satellite's going over every 18 days. The information you see can be changed and defined, redefined at any point in time depending on the needs.